come up. Good. Thank you. All right, it is 9 o'clock on Tuesday morning. You guys deserve a reward, right, for even showing up, so I'm very proud of you right now. So, how was the partying last night? Was it good? Woo! All right, had a good time. I see that. Do I see some hungover faces? No, I'm not going to look. I'm not going to look too closely. So, I'm very excited to be here at SharePoint Conference and getting to present to you guys. Very excited to be able to talk to you about business value. I'm extremely passionate about business value. Even though I am a geek by training, so we'll look forward to going in. So please hurry up and find a seat, and we'll get started. Okay. So my name is Naomi Moneypenny. I'm going by Naomi Show Me the Money Penny today, okay? Because this is all about the business value, and I really want to give you some examples of how you can get the money, your investment that you've made in SharePoint and other information infrastructure, and really think about how you can actually derive value from it. So as I mentioned, I'm kind of a geek by background. I was an astrophysicist, and so I've actually transitioned into doing more around business value and understanding around technology. I used to work at Shell for a while, so I used to do technology forecasting, knowledge management strategies, really cool new technologies, how you can best sort of use those to enable business growth. So what I actually do now is I am the Chief Technology Officer at ManyWorlds. We are a software company based out of Houston, Texas, obviously a Microsoft and Yammer partner. And what I specifically work on now is actually adaptive systems. And so these are systems that actually learn from how people use them. And actually do machine learning and behavioral inferencing to understand what is best for people and figure out how to give anticipatory experiences. You can check us out at synexi.com. We do expertise and content discovery. And so one of the things that I lead into with that is really understanding how people's behaviors, how the workforce behaviors, and some of the things we heard about yesterday on the keynote was really understanding how we can think about having an inclusive environment, right? An integrated environment that actually allows us to drive value, drive information through the network. So if we think about that sort of key theme in terms of working like a network, I really want to sort of weave that in today so that we have an understanding from a business value perspective. Okay? So I'm on Twitter. I'm @nmoneypenny. If you want to follow me, I will follow you back. I think we're using #SPC106 for this session, or the general hashtag for the conference is, of course, #SPC14. So we'll go ahead and do that. All right. Oh, one other thing I want to mention on here. I put this globe map in here not to show that I was global or anything else, but I realized that I have a weird accent. Okay, so people always come and ask me, like, where are you from? You know, I hear, like, a little bit of English. I hear Australian. I hear South Africa. People hear whatever they want to hear is what I've figured out. So, it's been one of those things where I've lived in lots of different countries in the world, and so I've picked up a little bit of an accent everywhere I go, and being in Texas doesn't help, right? I'm just going to say that, okay? So it's just one of those things. So, all right. So here's my agenda for the day. So given that we have, 60 minutes or so to share together, and I'm going to try to hit the high points. This really is a business value session. This is about business strategy. It's more about that than SharePoint. I happen to be here at the SharePoint conference. I love and use SharePoint every day, but I really want to talk to you about how you can actually derive value out of your IT systems. Right, and I truly mean derivation. I am a physicist, so derivation actually is something coming from that thing, right? So understanding, it's not just about driving the business value, it's actually about how do I actually derive value out of my information assets. So business reality check. There's a couple of things that are actually going on in the world that we really need to know about, and figuring out those sort of key trends and how we can actually use them is very important. I'm also going to go through some of these value sources, because there's sort of three sort of main buckets of value depending on sort of the maturity of your organization and how your information infrastructure is currently in place. I'm also going to explain a little bit about how we can exploit informational advantages, because it's really important these days in our different industries to think about the information that's going in. If we're thinking about working like a network, we really have to understand the information and how it's flowing around the organization and out into the ecosystem. So understanding from that perspective how our partners, our suppliers, our customers, how all of those things are actually interacting. And it's an important thing to have a holistic understanding of what's going on. Just thinking about your company in isolation is really not enough anymore for business growth, right? I really want to hammer on that session, okay? So I think you know, you started to see some of these things yesterday. Is anybody in Adam Pozzoni's session yesterday? Show of hands. Okay, a few people. All right, so Adam talked a little bit about return on assets. And I think it's important to really think about this. So from a business perspective, let's think about what we've been doing, what we've been investing heavily in the last few years. And it doesn't really matter if you're in oil and gas, if you're in consumer products, if you're, you know, in distribution, any of those things, right? So it's thinking about the hard assets that are on the ground, right? What do we spend all the time inside of our companies really thinking about? We really think about the financial decisions around where we place facilities, where we put assets in ground, where do we actually put together factories, warehouses, all of those kind of things. And those are really the areas that we put the most around our decision quality and understanding how much the financial ramifications mean to our company. We don't spend very much time thinking about how the return on information gets generated. But what it shows in this little diagram here is that the return on assets has really decreased significantly over time. And so the issue is, even from 1965 till now, we've had significant decrease in return on assets. So we spend most of the time in our organizations really trying to figure out what capital investments we should make. How do we place our dollars correctly, right? We're all here, casino, gambling. How do I put those big bets in place? How do I make the financial models improve the decision quality? It's really important to how we strategically plan things. And then what do? We find out that actually the return on assets has decreased, you know, over 12% in the last 40 years. Right? It's kind of amazing to think about that. It's like, what are we doing? We're looking at our different parts of our organization. We're placing these strategic bets. We put huge bets on that. We put all the money in there. And then we're not getting the delivery on that asset. We are not getting the return that we used to get. It's kind of stunning to me. So why is that? Let's think about the imperative that's really important here in terms of thinking return on assets versus return on intellectual capital. And so the story of the ROA decline has really been that there's been an overinvestment, or even like a bad mix of investments in traditional assets. Returns on everything else that isn't an asset is basically around intellectual capital. So the best proxy for this is the things that we think about in terms of human intellectual capital. But it also includes information, knowledge, connections, and expertise. These kinds of computer-based constructs that enhance human intellectual capital are really important inside of your organization. And actually, one of the reasons that we've been looking at things is times of the productivity has been increasing. So we've been asking our assets, we've been spending as much money as we can on our assets and looking at that investment mix, but we're actually asking our employees to do more. Right, and that so far has been offsetting the amount of the decreases in assets and the increase in productivity. And so it's very important to think about, we can't get sustainable growth out of that model, right? We cannot ask our employees to keep doing more and more and more, right? We've been through this sort of transition, we've been through a recession a couple of times, depending on where you've been located in the world. And so you've had this increase in productivity. We've asked, you know, people to be as productive as they possibly can, right? We've asked more for our workforce. We've asked more from our information assets. We're asking more and more every day. And why are we doing this? We're trying to actually offset this decrease in return on assets. So thinking about this, what do we really need to do? The answer is that we have to get more returns on this intellectual capital in order to actually increase the returns on our assets. And so, you know, thinking about these multiplications of examples is incredible, right? The ROA is basically a lagging indicator, according to Deloitte. The trajectory provides insight into the quality of prior decisions and also helps challenge the fundamental assumptions that these decisions were made on, right? So we can see ROA tells us how well we did in hindsight. And hindsight is 2020, right? And 2020 says, you know, that's what the chart looks like, right? 2020 says we didn't do really good. You didn't place your bets well. Right? So we spent all this money in our companies. We've invested in these assets. We're not getting the increases that we need, even though that's traditionally the way to increase business growth in your company. So, okay, let's move on. So let's go through a couple of another business reality. This one is around digitization. And I put this quote up here from Andrew McAfee. Andrew is the person who coined the term Enterprise 2.0. You may have read his book. It's really good. And of course, it's from a while ago, and it's sort of thinking about these different workforces and how organizations and capabilities have changed. And so we can think about digitization because we're all sitting here with all of our devices, right? We can sit here with all of the bits and bytes that are going in. But the same thing is happening inside of our companies, right? The same thing is happening with all of the assets that we put into the ground. As I mentioned, I used to work in oil and gas, so we can think about pipelines of information, right? We're thinking about all the new sensor technologies. We're thinking about all of the things that you can put into warehousing, into RFID chips, all of these kind of things. So really thinking about the data that is produced and amazing opportunities around that data. And we know about this stuff, right? We know about digitization. It's like, yeah, I know this trend. It's, you know, it's like, what is she talking about with this stuff, really? It's like, this is just another trend, right? No, it isn't. The information that comes out of your assets is more valuable than the asset itself, okay? I want you to process that for a little bit because it's thinking about the warehouse, thinking about the refinery, thinking about that facility, thinking about the pipeline in the ground. That is more important. The information that comes out of that thing is more important. We can see these just general consumer examples, right? How is it that Facebook has managed to overcome Amazon.com? I just, you know, a few years ago, we used to worry about Amazon.com taking over from Barnes & Noble and Borders and all these retail stores, right? So people who had physical locations, you thought, they would never be taken over by, you know, digital companies like Amazon, right? And now Amazon has, you know, warehouses and distribution facilities and maybe even some drones, right, to come deliver stuff eventually. But you know, they've sort of built, you know, resources, they've built facilities. And now you've got companies who are like Facebook, and they have basically nothing. They have servers, right? And they're worth more than Amazon that actually has facilities. And Amazon is worth more than the people who have real retail facilities on the ground. And I like to give retail as an example. It's just because it's something we can all relate to, even though I realize probably most of us are in business to business or even in government. So I like to give retail because retail is a really, I think of it as an experimentation pipeline, right? Retail is a good example because we are very easy to switch. The switching costs and then the overcoming the barriers to entry are actually pretty low. And so thinking about those examples helps me a lot. So thinking about digitization, so, you know, Andrew's saying here the technology is going to race ahead. But we really want to think about how can we actually enable that inside of the organization? How is it that when we make these capital decisions for return on assets and thinking about where we're going to place our bets, we can actually enable the information streams that go along with it? I think that's a very important thing to really think about. Part of that is coming into, you know, what we're going to do here with SharePoint. So, you know, show me the money, right? So we talk about this stuff, these business realities, right? We're decreasing return on assets. We've got increasing return on intellectual capital if we can enable it enough. And then we're really thinking about digitization and how all of that data that we're producing inside of our organization and how we can actually put it together. So how does this come together with business value, right? Because everything starts with business value. If you're an IT manager, if you're anything, right? It's always like, well, we have to go back to the business to ask them what's important, right? But oftentimes, the business can't make the connection between the information systems and actually what drives value inside of the organization. Because they don't understand oftentimes where that value comes from, what does it really mean, right? So I have some examples on here in terms of just thinking about the value drivers. I'll start from the bottom here. So productivity. We're really thinking about increased output, right? What does that really mean on top of your balance sheet? It really means OPEX reduction, right? So we talk a lot about productivity. You hear a lot of messaging, right, about Office and SharePoint and knowledge worker productivity, right? What does it mean? OPEX reduction, okay? Really think about that. Information and decision quality. So this is where we get to our capital expenses, right? So where do we calculate this stuff around return on assets? Right, we do these giant spreadsheets, huge financial models, right? You get to use all this fun stuff and Power BI and whatever, it's awesome. But you know, but you actually get to look at the financial impact of what it means inside of your company. And your model is only as good as the information going into it, right? This is the hard reality. The model is only as good as the information that goes in. If we can't have good, you know, sort of decision analysis, if we can't have value of information calculations, even value of learning calculations, it's most interesting. So operating margin increasing, every business wants that, right? You want operating margin increase? Of course you do, right? So that's good. So it's most important for entire of your organization. And looking at that CapEx ROI, amazing. But here's where it gets really exciting, right? It's the innovation and growth pipeline. How do I enable innovation and growth inside of my organization? What does it mean? It really means around these revenue increases. It's this R&D throughput, right? Thinking about experimentation, thinking about a pipeline of products that are going through, and I get to iterate on that pipeline faster and faster, and I also get to compress the cycle time of the things going through the pipeline. That's worth real, real money. And you can actually do a lot with SharePoint and your information infrastructure in order how to enable that better. And it's kind of incredible to think about it. And then obviously operating margin increases, right? So that's what we're really looking for. What I'm trying to sort of hammer on in this presentation is really to say the growth that you can experience inside of your organization is going to be directly correlated to how you've invested in your information assets and how you can actually put those information assets to work. It's very important. I want to be very explicit about the connection between these value drivers and the financial impacts inside of your organization. Because so many times, if you're in IT, I should poll you guys. Who is actually in IT? IT managers? Okay. All right, so I'm in IT too, so I'm a CTO, so I get to hang on ourselves sometimes. And then the rest of you guys are in the business units, business managers kind of things, okay? All right, are there any C-level people? CMOs, CTOs, CEOs, okay, a few? Okay, all right, good to know. So just from that perspective, I see in IT a lot, we ask the business, right? We ask for business value, we ask them to make that connection, but they don't understand what the financial impact ramification is, and we don't understand sometimes what it means in terms of actually investing information assets into this kind of model. Okay. So we really want to reduce the cycle time to informational advantages. And we've all seen this little chart like this before, you know, it's the data goes to information, goes to knowledge thing, right? And we actually prefer inside of many worlds to talk about insights and institutionalized insights. Because what we're trying to do is really raise the collective intelligence inside of the organization. If we're going to work like a network, part of the issue is being decreasing those barriers, decreasing those informational issues, and having everybody in the organization raise their intelligence level so they're able to compute things faster, they're actually dealing with things in a quicker way because they have a more holistic perspective. So many times we talk about silos inside of the organization, right? And silos are like, they're a terrible thing, we know that. But sometimes they're really good for deep specialization. But sometimes those silos, they miss the connectivity across the organization so that we can see things holistically. And so what we want to do is reduce the cycle time it takes us to get from data to institutionalized insights. Right? We want to compress this down as fast as we can. So understanding how we can do that becomes very important. We really want to think about this data to action lifecycle. It's just a simple example on here, but you can work about it a lot more. And I should mention, I'm happy to answer questions on Yammer afterwards about this stuff because I realize I'm going to do this at a high level. And, you know, it's a 100 session and it said comprehensive in, you know, 60 minutes, so that's awesome. Thanks for that, Microsoft. So that's good, right? So 60 minutes, yeah, comprehensive. It's good. So I'm happy to answer questions on Yammer. I have a colleague who's answering questions too on Yammer, just so that you know that, Stephen Flynn, you'll see him out there. So if there's any quick questions, then he can probably take them too. So really thinking about this data to action lifecycle, I want to think about how we can position each part of the chain in terms of supporting this pyramid. Because we're trying to look at data acquisition, data filtering, data storage, search and discovery. You should call these buckets whatever makes sense for your organization. It's just about how we can parse the data and have an understanding of what to do with it. Because what I want to do is be able to actually identify bottlenecks in this process. What makes it difficult for the information to flow in your organization? What makes it difficult for you to work like a network? Think about how that information flow happens right now. Where are the silos? There could be information silos, there could be business silos, there could be lots of, you know, corporate culture silos, right, even. But thinking about if we're going to work like a network, we have to transcend a lot of those boundaries. Understanding whether it's geographic boundaries, whether it's informational boundaries, whether it's corporate boundaries, understanding these things. So I want to think about how do you identify the bottlenecks in this cycle and then be able to basically compress the cycle time to get there. If we can't get these informational advantages out of our organizations, we're basically, you know, we're stuck, we're doomed to that quote that Adam showed yesterday from Jack Welch, which is basically the pace of change outside of the organization is faster than one inside of the organization. And when that happens, you know, you're losing your organization and you're going to get eaten. So here's a little thing around SharePoint and the business value framework. And I made this quite simple. I have a more detailed model with a white paper that goes with this. But really understanding how we can position these business value drivers and have an understanding of the maturity level inside of the organization. and then putting out some different examples of maybe potential solutions that you work on. So I'm trying to drive home here. Here's the connection between that business value stuff. If you want to work on operating assets, you want to work on operating margin, you want to work on CapEx decisions, right? Really thinking about those things. And then looking at the maturity level inside of the organization of where you are. Because obviously you can't put some of these things in if you're not actually ready for it. And so thinking about these different silos, you know, you might be more in the experimentation phase right now. If you're just putting in SharePoint, it's just SharePoint for, you know, file management, content management, records management, some of those simple things. You may be more in that experimentation phase. And then looking at what we can do for productivity, right? What can we do for productivity? We can say information silo busting. Right? I'm a big thing on silo busting because that is one of the primary drivers inside of our organizations, right? We cannot connect the people inside of organizations without getting rid of these silos. And so individual silos, team silos, you know, business unit silos, we have them all, even across processes. But it's the most important thing to work on because if we don't get rid of that, we can't have that information flow in the network. If we talk to, you know, Bill Clinton's address yesterday was really about the transparency of information right across the world, thinking about how we can enable different ways of working because the information is able to flow effectively. And if we want information to flow effectively, then we get our informational insights. If we drive informational insights, we make money. Simple as that. Right? In the oil and gas business, right? So I'll give an example. We all pay a lot of money at the pump, right? We get upset because it's like, oh, these oil companies are making so much money, right? You see Exxon's probably somebody from Exxon in the room, sorry. So you see Exxon at the top of the list there, and you think, hey, you know, they're making all this money, and it's like, I'm paying all this money at the pump, and it's really expensive, and it feels like, you know, I'm really getting gouged and whatever. And the reality is, you know, at least in the U.S., you really don't make any money in refining, right? You make money digging oil out of the ground, but you actually don't make any money out of refining. You only make money in refining when somebody else is down in the U.S. So when somebody else has a service interruption, they have maintenance, something like that, that's actually when you make money in refining in the United States, right? It's kind of amazing to think about it. So we have all these big facilities, this big steel in the ground, these big pipes and all the stuff that goes on, and people look at them and it's sort of a lightning rod, in terms of we have this big refinery, it's pumping out these smells and all this other stuff, right, that you have to deal with. And that thing is not making money. It is running at cost most of the time, right? 90% of the year, it is running at cost. And it's waiting for somebody else to have a problem. Right? When that person has a problem, another company has that problem, then, you know, we start making money. And it's really exciting, you know, it's kind of interesting to think about it because, again, that asset by itself is somehow not worth anything. It's operating at cost. It may be even, you know, operating above cost. And so that's part of the problem. But it's the informational insight in terms of understanding when somebody else is down, how long we can be down, how, you know, fast we can restore service, those kinds of things. It actually drives the revenue that you get for the price that you pay at the pump. And so it's part of the issue there is, you know, we have taxes and other things that we pay for gas prices. But a lot of it is actually paying for downtime, right? You actually pay for downtime. So, okay, so moving on. So the evolving sort of level here. So thinking about organizational silo busting, I'm sort of trying to build these things up. So we've got information silos. We're thinking about organization silos. Maybe it's working with different customers. Maybe it's working with your suppliers. Maybe it's working with partners, those kinds of things. It could even be if you have a group of companies, right? That often happens, right? So if you're a larger organization and you have these different business units and they actually, you know, usually work autonomously, that's often an issue in terms of being able to place people across this network. And then thinking about, you know, skills and asset mapping if you're really in the information and decision quality. I wouldn't try to go much further if you're in the sort of evolving level in terms of, you know, SharePoint infrastructure and what you're doing in terms of an integrative infrastructure for information. I would really concentrate on doing the one source of truth kind of things, right? So, because we have those problems. And when I talk about this information infrastructure, I put SharePoint in there, obviously. SharePoint is more of a glue, right, for these different systems in the organization. And I think that's really the way you have to position it. So if you're in IT and we're thinking about this, we've always said SharePoint is a platform, right? We've said SharePoint is a platform, is a platform, is a platform. But it really is, right? It really, really is. But it can be the glue. It can be that connective technology amongst lots of things inside of your organization that allow you to work like a network, right? It really can be doing those things. And so thinking about, you know, how we can place that with ERP systems, how we can put line of business information in there becomes really important. And we want to make that connection again to the business value. I want to stress that, because if we're trying to look at how we do operating, you know, margin increase, if we're trying to look at CapEx reduction, all of these things, right, they have a very dramatic increase in the information load that is required to be able to drive that value. And oftentimes that is what the thing that's missing inside of organizations, right? We put in these big IT projects and it doesn't deliver, right? We have this vision, we have this stuff, it really doesn't deliver. Okay, moving on here. So established, we have these different organizational levels in here, and there's lots of things around business intelligence in terms of interest discovery. We can look at expertise discovery, really thinking about how do we connect the people, the places, all those things together inside of the organization. And then we can look at, you know, an extended ecosystem, again, across partners, suppliers, customers, really thinking about integrative examples there. One of the examples I like to share is I talked to Coca-Cola Enterprises a few days ago. They actually presented at SPC 12. I don't know if anybody, show of hands, if anybody remembers going to their presentation maybe? Okay. So I talked to them and I asked them, where have you really gotten the value out of your SharePoint 2013 investment? And for them, it's actually been in business solutions that go faster. Basically, the ability to develop business solutions on a quicker time period. So for them, they're actually more of a transportation and logistics company. So even it's part of Coca-Cola Enterprises, but what they're actually doing is providing the flavoring, I guess it is, and being able to parse it out to the different distributors. And so for them, actually rolling out new business solutions that enable that faster, new logistics companies, understanding how people get integrated into the network faster, and as field sales representatives go around, they're able to sort of feed back some of that information. Maybe it's competitive pricing, maybe there's something different going on inside of their ecosystem. But what they were saying was the big contrast for them from what they showed in 2012 was they were looking at SharePoint 2010. In SharePoint 2013, they're finding it takes days, literally a few days, to roll out new business solutions that they're actually working on, and they can do it faster without, you know, lots of core development going on. In 2010, they had to do everything in a custom development, and so they've gotten the advantage. They've sort of compressed that cycle time. They've compressed the cycle time between what field sales are seeing, what logistics are seeing, and they've compressed that cycle time from the data to an institutionalized insight, right? They're able to go faster because they can raise the organizational awareness and understand what's going on and understand what's going on inside of their ecosystem. So if you want to really drive value, if you say you're in a logistics company, right, it's all about that data. It's all about how do I understand that data and put it together so that I understand how I can make more money in the marketplace. Okay. Moving forward. So strategic, you know, things around SharePoint here, this is part of our issue, right? So I always like to pick on SAP or one of the ERP systems because we're all sort of very familiar with them. We went through this large re-engineering effort to support them. And part of the issue is that, you know, we really put SAP in as a result of lots of business process re-engineering, right? If we did Michael Hammer stuff, if you did, there's all this stuff from the past you may remember, right? So really thinking that was process driven. And ERP systems are the result of all of that nice process work. The problem we have with SharePoint is SharePoint's just this thing, right? It just grew up inside of our organizations. And we're like, hey, what happened? Because we're really, you know, it was just this file management system and, you know, hey, we just tried it out. You know, maybe it came free with the server licenses, you know, whatever, right? It's one of those things. And people were like, oh, well, it just does this and it just is the file sharing and maybe we just use it as a content repository or records management and those kind of things. But really understanding that became a very IT-driven thing, right? In the ERP systems, we know the cost of being down, right? If your SAP isn't working, right, and you can't invoice or you can't do payables, right, the business criticality is very clear. With SharePoint, it isn't, right? It's really weird. So I've seen in organizations, I've seen in a Fortune 100 company recently, and they have, you know, 40 people around the world supporting their global implementation of SharePoint. And so this is a large, you know, Fortune 100 company. And they have four people supporting their IT system, which is SharePoint, right? Four people. So the information assets that are generating probably most of the intellectual capital, most of the productivity number, most of the numbers that are actually important for your organization have four people supporting it, right? And the big ERP system that's just calculating stuff in and out and all that, it's very important, don't get me wrong, but it has a lot more resources into it. And then we wonder why we can't, you know, make that connection to business value. Right? We've grown up out of this thing with IT systems, but we haven't made that connection. And guess what? You know, SharePoint's being a lot more strategic. So I want to take a minute to just think about these IT projects, right? We've all had failed IT projects, right? I'm just going to say it. Hopefully you all recognize that. Because one of the issues I think we've really experienced is, I assume you guys are in this session because you've tried before to, you know, have this business value conversation, whether it's with your executives, whether it's sort of understanding how to position SharePoint inside of your organization. So, you know, as we say in Texas, this is not our first time at the rodeo with this, right? So, and so I want to, you know, sort of be, you know, transparent about this. We understand that we've had failure before. Why have we had failure? So this is a study from 2011 from Jenica, and they surveyed a bunch of CIOs. So they went out to the largest organizations and really looked at the different ways of why their projects had failed. And the couple of red ones here that I want to call out was the fuzzy business objectives. So only 55% of the companies who implemented these IT projects, these were large over $1 million IT projects, right? Only 55% of them felt that the business objectives were clear to them. And we know, right? We know we're supposed to make this connection between business value, ask the business what they want, then we do this IT project. It's going to serve this information. And we know this, right? We've been doing this for years, and yet we still fail. 55% of the projects know at the beginning that they're not going to work out because the objectives are not clear. If we can't make that connection to those business value drivers, right? If we don't understand this productivity, understand about innovation and value growth, if we don't understand that the financial metric we're going after is capex decreases, operating margin increase. So if we don't think about those things and make that connection very explicit, the information that supports those decisions, we will never have a good IT project implementation. Because it really shouldn't be an IT project, right? It's an information technology project. It's actually an informational insight project, right? My friend Dan Holm, who's speaking also at the conference, often calls, you know, IT really, it should be around innovative IT, right? Innovative technology. It shouldn't really be around information technology anymore. So the other couple things here that I want to call out is really this requirements definition process. So who's been through one of these horrible requirements definition things where you have to go through, get the specifications, yes, it's really difficult, ask the business what they want, they don't know, you don't know how to explain to them what it can do, right? So you go in this iterative cycle and it's really awful and you sort of like, oh, what do I do, right? So because oftentimes, you know, the conversation that we have to have with the business is understanding what the art of the possible is. We ask the business what they want, and they don't know because they don't know what's possible. Right? So we have to cycle back to them as IT, go back to them and say, hey, you know, this is the art of the possible, well, what we could actually do, and have an understanding about that. Right? So you have to show them oftentimes what the art of the possible is in order to have them have the right level of conversation, whether that's examples from outside of your company or just thinking about, you know, different use cases, right? Really mapping those things out. But, you know, less than 20% of them describe the requirements process as the articulation of a business need. So we do this requirements process, we spend millions of dollars, and somehow it doesn't work out. And these are the things we see at the beginning, right? At the beginning of the project. We know the project's going to fail. We still do it because we've, you know, started the ball rolling, right? It's in the budget, and now we have to deliver, and it's on your, you know, your scorecard for the year, right? But we know at the beginning of the project it's going to fail. Scary. So, my clicker doesn't work. So SharePoint positioning. So SharePoint has crept up this value chain, right? It's no longer, you know, if you were here in 2007, if you were here even 2003, you know, I should ask, who's been running, who remembers 2001? Let's go all the way back there. All right, let's go back. Okay, look at you guys. Wow. So 2003, whoa, lots of it, okay. 2007, keep your hand up, okay. 2010. Whoa. And 2013, all right. And Office 365, let's just call that out specially. Okay, all right, good to know. So I have a range of everybody, right? So that's pretty awesome. So you guys know this stuff, right? That's why you're in here today, because you've done this before, right? Every year we have, or every 2 years when we have a SharePoint conference, is how do I get business value out of SharePoint, right? There's always one of those things. And here we are again, we're going to do this again. Because again, the connection to the value drivers is not clear. If you make that connection to the value drivers explicit, if we understand the financial impact of what we're doing, what the information that we're holding in the systems actually informs, we can make it clear to the business where the value is, and we can position the strategic technology. Okay. All right, let's talk about productivity. Really thinking about that sort of baseline level and in terms of what we want to do. So how much opportunity is in your industry? So this is a data from McKinsey from the Global Institute study in 2012. And there's a link in the presentation, I think, if they haven't taken it out, in terms of where you can get this white paper. And it's like a long white paper. It's like 86 pages, but I do recommend digging into it. So if it's something specific for your industry on here, it's actually pretty good. But really thinking about in terms of the average that you can actually get from the collaboration technologies and social technologies. Basically, this is you could see this as the return on intellectual capital opportunity inside of your industry. Really, you could think about lean manufacturing processes being in here as well, thinking about how I can put collaboration into those processes and how I can do iteration, right? I work with Toshiba Industrial that's headquartered in Houston. And one of the things that they do is really thinking about how do I position the collaboration inside of lean thinking, Six Sigma thinking. And I actually like that example a lot because I like to think about how we can integrate these things into our individual business processes. If we really think about how Six Sigma thinking, if we think about continuous improvement and actually being able to couple things like SharePoint, couple collaborative working, couple working like a network, working continuously to improve the business, think about how to put those inside of your organization. So if you're using these kind of processes right now and they're sort of embedded inside of your culture, this is a great way to sort of foist a collaboration into there and start weaving some of those key themes through. And really thinking about the opportunity space. So if you're in professional services, right, I mean, you can see there's a huge amount there, right? I mean, professional services is amazing. But I think about these things from an industry perspective, but I also think about them from an organizational perspective. Because, you know, who's in professional services inside of your organization? IT, HR, financial, right? All of these guys, right? All of our knowledge workers, these functional units that actually support key business units, these guys are all professional services, right, inside of your organization. So really thinking about this value here. You have an enormous amount of value just from being able to collaborate and using better information. Okay. Moving on to connectivity here. So hopefully maybe this quote resonates here. So $1 billion company maintaining 48 disparate financial systems and 2.7 ERP systems. I don't know how the 2.7 came out, but it's the average, right? It's like, I don't know, maybe you can be using half of a system or something. I don't know. It's like 2.4 children or something. But it's funny. Does this resonate, right? That you see this inside of your organizations? You have all these different types of systems. We have all these areas of ways of working. But we have these silos, information silos. We're thinking about how we can put this connectivity together is really important. If we can get the information out of these silos, we can actually inform the decisions we're making, whether it's around assets, it's capital expenditures, or even just operating margin. Thinking about that stuff. Right. Okay. So do you have these challenges, right? Of course we do. HR, engineering, thinking about, you know, ROI, thinking about, you know, the data that's stuck in these business critical systems. You know, we can actually think about how to extend the value of our lines of business systems. And so thinking, you know, how do we bridge this gap, right? We really think about it as SharePoint. So if you haven't maybe thought about SharePoint as truly that platform technology to do this, but it really is there now. SharePoint 2013 and the next releases that will come, it's really thinking about it from that connectivity standpoint. How do I put these lines of business systems together? How do I get the information out of those systems? So think about what you can do with the fast search engine that's now built in, right? So it's every few years, you know, Microsoft does this sort of billion-dollar acquisition, right, to improve the product line, as far as I can tell. So I don't work for Microsoft, so I get to say this kind of stuff, right? So, you know, in 2008, they bought Fast, which is the search engine that gives you all these nice preview results and looks through the different text in there inside of the organization. But a lot of people don't realize that you can actually take Fast and turn it on file shares, that you can turn it on to different LOB systems, and you can even turn it on outside of your organization. So if you want to go off and like mine for different data off of the internet, you can actually use Fast to do that too and bring that stuff internally if you wanted to. And then thinking about how we actually get that line of business system data into SharePoint. because there's a lot around business intelligence, right? There's lots of sessions today around business intelligence and thinking about how you can actually use that data effectively. And so if we want to use these really cool new systems and these different ways of doing things, this becomes very important. Okay. So, you know, connected value of ROI. So this is a very simple example here. If you look at how we can do things in terms of business, in terms of avoiding costs and making better decisions, we're looking at 200,000 to 300,000 improvement in just the first year, right? It should help to pay for some of the stuff that we have to do, right? And this is a simple example. This is an average example from the folks at Microsoft that do business critical SharePoint. And so looking at, you know, cycle time improvement. That is really important. I mean, how do we decrease this cycle time of things going through the organization, and how do we get the money from that? And then again, faster deployment, thinking about, you know, how we can put things, new services out there. It's a Coca-Cola example in terms of thinking about how I can actually, put new products and services out there, but also how I can deliver solutions internally so that I get the data that I need in order to make better decisions. So think about that. It's a return on investment around these organizations. All right. I'm going to move on to the growth opportunities, because this is the part that gets me really excited, right? So we know stuff about productivity. We know stuff about connectivity. You know what this stuff is for, right? We know the opportunities there. We know it's hard to solve inside of the organization. But now I want to give you some ammo, because I really want to think about how we can do things really differently inside of our organizations. Because if you want to get money for IT, right, you want to get money to put your SharePoint products in, you want to get money to put your new resources in, it's all about how do I actually enable growth inside of the organization. That's the part that gets me really excited. So, you know, we got this nice quote here from Gartner, thinking about how people who can put information sources together, disparate information sources together, how they can actually do that increases their returns on their industry by 20%. So I want to tell you a little story. Who uses Amazon to shop? You guys use Amazon? Good. All right. I'm like an Amazon fiend. I don't know. It's like they got that Amazon Prime service, right? And it's like it gives you the stuff for like 24 hours. You know, you buy stuff and it gives you, it ships it to you in 24 hours. It's like I buy the stuff all the time. I'm like, instant gratification, basically, right? So, but one of the examples I want to give you is if I said to you, if you could just read the reviews on Amazon and create a $100 million company from it, would you do it? All you have to do is read reviews. Amazing, right? So there's a company in New Jersey, in the old warehouse that's out there, 150 employees. And CNA Marketing is their name. You might have bought some of their products because they actually put together lots of different products for different people. But all they do all day, 150 people, over $100 million of revenue from doing this, 30% growth in their company. Let me say that again. 30% growth. And all they do is read reviews on Amazon. All that data that we give out for free, right? We go in there at Amazon. Most of us don't do reviews, but the people who do, like, really help us inform our decisions, right? So we go out there, we do our reviews, we say, hey, this is really great, but I wish it had a different handle. I wish it had this feature. I wish it had this or something. And so what these guys do, and you see some of these people, Ivation, you can check it out on Amazon. These are live examples. So you can see that. They look at the different reviews. So in this case, there's a speaker system, and it's a Bluetooth speaker system. And they look at the reviews, and it says, hey, I wish it was wireless. I wish it, you know, was waterproof. I wish it had this kind of battery life, those kind of things. And so what we try to do is really think about, you know, the reviews that are in there, and they have people actually reading through them right now in order to try to articulate what it is that people need. They look at those things, and then they send those specifications off, put a specification document together, and basically put a specification out to people in China and India who have manufacturing facilities, who then make those items and then actually put them straight into Amazon, ship them directly to Amazon in terms of distribution and suppliers, and then we actually will buy that stuff from Amazon. So we have 150 people sitting in a warehouse in New Jersey just reading reviews. It's data that's free, right? It's customers who are talking for free about the opportunities and thinking about what it is that they want. So you say, hey, well, Naomi, that's, you know, kind of a, you know, it's an Amazon example. You know, we're a real company, right? We're an old company, right? It's one of those things, right? That doesn't really count for us, or we don't have consumer-facing stuff. So I'll talk a little bit about Zara. So Zara is a really interesting company to me. Again, I like retail examples, and I like retail just because we can pick with examples that are close to us. And so I like them because the consumer products branding stuff is really important, and we can actually think about how the switching cost works inside of the organization and beyond, right? And so what happens with clothing, right? Clothing fashion is a crazy thing. It's like you buy a bunch of stuff that you already have, right? It's like the thing that the barrier is really like you have a bunch of clothes at home already, and then you say, I'm going to go out. I'm not going to use these ones that I already have that work perfectly well. They're in good shape and everything else. And then I'm going to go off in fashion and like find something else, right? It's like a crazy, crazy industry if you really think about it. And all of our consumers are doing this. Whether you're in a business-to-business thing, it's the same cycle, right? It's I already have this thing. I'm going to sell you this better thing. I just need to increase the cycle time of people doing this, right? It's crazy. So thinking about Zara. So the man who has 59% of the holding company of Zara is a guy you've probably never heard of. But he knocked Warren Buffett down a place on the billionaire list, right? So he is now the third, you know, most wealthiest man in the world, you know, other than Bill Gates and Carlos Slim. Salvador, who runs this, is really is an older guy, and he's actually an entrepreneur, and he's one of the creators of Zara. And so Zara's model is really very different from a manufacturing perspective. They have very few designers. They have a very centralized sort of organization, but their speed to market is incredible. Right, so their thing in terms of retail is like they don't do any advertising, right? They don't do anything that says, hey, promotional stuff inside of these glossy magazines. What they do is actually co-locate where there are sort of high-end stores in a mall. So where you see Prada or Louis Vuitton or whatever, that's where they put a store close to those stores. And they get some sort of residual effect off of that. But what's more important for them is actually understanding what their consumers want. And I say this because that's the opportunity. That's really where informational advantages are going to come from. It's understanding what your customers want and how do I get information assets, how do I get that insight faster from those consumers to inside of my organization. Again, if that pace of change outside is increasing and it's decreasing inside of the organization, you know, we're going to really suffer. So thinking about how we can do that. So what Zara does is actually allows their store managers and they unify this data every day with their point of sale systems, so they let the store managers collect up customer feedback. So if people say, hey, you know, I want a jacket with a different kind of lapel or something, right, as they talk to customers, they're asked to, you know, interact with customers and ask them what it is that they want. And they actually feed that all of that data back every single day to corporate headquarters, where a bunch of designers, very few designers, but probably about around 20, actually put together all of these different manufacturing variations. And so they actually managed to cycle through this so fast, it's up to 15 days between the original design and thinking about how they can actually get that manufactured, distributed, you know, from China or from India, wherever in the world, basically, that's making these clothes. And they can actually get it into a store in the United States, in Spain, in Europe, anywhere, within 15 days. Just think about what it takes in the ecosystem to do that, right? You've got point of sale data every day. You've got manufacturing information in terms of who's available, you know, what machines are available, what fabrics are available, those kinds of things. You've got designers. And then you've actually got this collaborative network that understands that the value comes from producing the design very quickly and getting it into the stores. So if we contrast this with how we would normally do this, right? We'd do customer focus groups. We'd look at, you know, runway trends. We'd look at these kinds of things. So if I'm a company, like I like to give Cuisinart as an example, right? So if I'm a company that makes, you know, food processing and other home equipment, I could look at the reviews on Amazon, or I could run all these focus groups, which is what I do now, right? So I could be CNA marketing, and I could look at, you know, how to review what people are asking for on Amazon and where those customer, you know, advantages lie. And then I could think about how to do it, how I do it traditionally. And that product development cycle takes a long time right now, right? It really does. And so, you know, companies that are using this, it's speeding this up, understanding that whole ecosystem, how you can put things together in a new and different way are the companies that are going to win. Why does this matter? Right? You could use Fast inside of SharePoint right now to go to Amazon and drag that data down into your systems. Do you do it? Not yet. But you should. Right? If you're in that kind of market, you should. Right? You can use this stuff inside of business intelligence systems right now. You could be using the power of the network, all this free information that is out there. you could actually use it to strengthen the business and understand your customers better so that you invest better in your assets and get better returns on your assets. That information infrastructure is more important than the hard asset that's in the ground. Managing that information infrastructure, managing that process that's going through and understanding how things are working, how the information is getting through the data to action lifecycle, going from that value cycle in terms of informational insights, and how do I cycle through that faster, right? That's the process that we need to speed up inside of our organizations. It's a fundamental process, and it needs to be tied to all of those other fundamental processes inside the organization. Whether it's product development, whether it's sales and marketing, whatever R&D, whatever it is that you happen to work in. So thinking about examples like this, right? Again, retail is an easy one to understand, and I understand when you're in business-to-business situations, it's harder. But it's really important to think about how I can use that information that's out there and how I couple that insight from my customers. And whether it's working like a network, I could be using external networks on Yammer to have better information about my customers, how I'm talking to them. I could think about, the different ways I'm using collaboration technologies right now. There's all this data that's available, and it's being able to couple it together that's really important. So, you say, Naomi, you're just making this stuff up, right? You give me these retail examples, you give me this Amazon example, where's the money, right? Show me the money again. So don't believe me, you can believe McKinsey, right? There's another Global Institute study, just came out. And open data, this is that free information that's on the internet right now. You can actually have government data, whether it's GIS data. There's all kinds of sort of location data that's available. There's a couple of sessions during SBC that are around these kind of areas. Just thinking about how I can take that open data and put it together. So we're understanding that, machine-based intellectual capital is just as important as the human-based intellectual capital we have inside of the organization. Very different in perspective, right? To think about. So open data can help unlock $3 trillion to $5 trillion in economic value across 7 sectors. Trillions of dollars. Trillions. Right? I like big numbers, right? I like big numbers. I'm a physicist. I like big numbers, right? But it's really understanding that. So unpacking it to think about the analytics, thinking about business intelligence opportunities. But again, if we don't have our fundamental information infrastructure, if we don't have a platform like SharePoint to glue all this stuff together, your business cannot help to unlock some of this growth opportunity. So even in sectors like education, in transportation, in healthcare, right? Just thinking about all the GIS data that's available to you, all of the information that's actually out there right now, and thinking about the ways that people could work together more effectively. And those are actually some of the biggest sectors, sectors that we don't traditionally think about from a customer perspective, right? It's not a consumer model, it's a customer. Okay. So moving on. So where to start? Okay, so gone on a lot about this stuff today, and I will keep going through here. So what did I do tomorrow? So thinking again about those value drivers, right? I'm trying to make it very clear, and I'm sorry if it seems like I'm being repetitive or something like that, but I want to make it very clear, because we have failed at this in the past, right? We have failed at making this explicit connection between the value and what it is that we do with our IT systems. And if we keep failing, our companies will keep failing. So we really want to think about, how we can drive these connections and make it more explicit. Make it understandable to the organization as a whole of why we're doing these IT projects. What information is really important? So again, think back to those value drivers. Think about what it is that you're trying to enable inside of the organization, and really think about how I can make those connections. So, be very clear. If you're talking to different business units, how do I make this value clear? Then we have to think about our maturity stage, right? There's no point trying to, bite off more than we can chew. Again, we know this, but we see this data and all these studies about IT projects that have failed, right? We know we shouldn't do too much. We know we should phase it out. We do these things, but somehow we never quite get there, right? We never, we conceptually understand it, and then somehow something changes. So it's thinking about what can I do, value drivers, what kind of maturity stage can I offer, and think about those areas. So then opportunity in your industry. I put some big numbers up there. There's lots of stuff. I'm happy again. I will answer lots of questions on Yammer because I know there's going to be a lot of questions in terms of thinking about what I could do inside of my industry. What are those opportunities for gaining informational insights? I'm thinking about, you know, explicitly making that connection again from a value driver perspective. And setting the strategy and understanding those key performance indicators. But again, I want to make clear, we want to put the existing processes, think about how we put collaboration into the processes, thinking about that working like a network mantra. How do I get the information flowing inside of the organization? How do I make that flow faster? How do I make that pipeline faster? If I have, you know, more and more digitization in my company, if I have more bits and bytes coming into me, how do I capture all of that data? Right? I like this, you know, it's an expression. You know, we talk a lot about big data and those kind of things. But in the future, there's no such thing, at least in business, there's no such thing as TMI. Right? There's no such thing as too much information. Okay, so that's how big data works. Right? But you want to have capture that information, even if you don't know what to do with it right now. It's the where your informational insights is going to come from in 3 to 5 years. So if you have sensor data, if you have distribution data, whatever that data is, keep it, because you will need it, because it will help you, you know, look at trends. It will help you identify new segments, new opportunities. And that's where it really comes down to. So a couple of examples in here. And so I looked on Yammer, sort of people were asking for different types of examples. And I tried to hit a few highlights, and then I'll go back through and think about these others. So if I'm in professional services, again, I think about this from an organizational standpoint. What are the functional units inside of the company and what we can do there too? And so thinking about those different functions, hey, what are these the sort of key things that I might work on, depending on my maturity level? Like I said, I'm a big fan of this information silo busting, right? Really thinking about how do I enable this line of business data? How do I put data together in those silos that we're, you know, we're currently working in? And really understanding the ramifications for those things. And then thinking about as we evolve through, we can actually look at expertise location, we can look at business intelligence, and thinking about how do I make my processes more efficient. Process efficiency, Lean Six Sigma, whatever you call it inside of your organization, is about the information flowing through that pipeline. If again, if I can speed through there, if I can make better quality decisions through there, I make money. It's as simple as that. But it's like we don't make that explicit connection right now. Then consumer products. Really, I think the key things here around business intelligence and understanding collaborative design, right? So if I work for any sort of company that's touched by consumers in any sort of way, it really comes down to that, right? It becomes an opportunity to think about how do I get the information that I need to make better decisions around what customers want. And I can use Amazon, I can use those kinds of things. But thinking about how do I prioritize this out, right? Very important. And then, you know, if I've got oil and gas in here, I think we could put manufacturing in here generally, and maybe even on automotive. I think with those kind of things where you have a lot of vendors, you have a lot of commoditization in different parts, this is where it comes down to. It really comes to one source of truth, thinking about how do I use SharePoint as that platform that stores all of the data together? How do I put things together that people actually want to see, right? How do I get that information out of the silos and figure out new different opportunities from it? And then use business intelligence to actually be able to proactively understand the economics around things. And then collaborative design, right? This, it's so important. It doesn't matter if you're in oil and gas or manufacturing. All of these things, we are part of the ecosystem. Our part of the value chain is really dependent on everybody else delivering. What we've got right now is the way we make money is actually out of those bottlenecks, right? We think about where the bottlenecks are, and we find these little niche players. That's why companies that are highly integrated are going out of business, right? It's because people will come in and find that sweet spot in your value chain, identify how to do it better, and then take over. So you need to think about those informational insights inside of your own value chains. How do I get better information into those sweet spots and think about how I get to increase my differentiation, how I can increase my informational insights? So, okay. So takeaways. I really want to think about SharePoint as that glue, that connectivity glue, and how we can get the data from many processes into it, right? I think it's really, really important to understand how we can position SharePoint to be the platform that can do this. Because we really want a platform technology, we need a glue technology to be able to do this, but we have to be able to look at how we can model business intelligence reporting, how I can put together other lines of business system data. It really is the only system that can do this for us. So, you know, love it or hate it, hopefully we all love it since we're all here at SharePoint conference, that it really is that connectivity glue. And then possibility to actually derive business value. I hope I've made that really clear today, right? Derivation of actual value from informational insights. I hope it's clear to you that you can actually, it's not just about driving business value, it's rather about deriving business value. Because again, that return on assets, the thing we spend the most money on right now, is not the thing that makes money inside of our organizations. It's the thing that doesn't, you know, increase the growth, right? It's the return on intellectual capital. Intellectual capital has two sources. There's humans and there's machine data that we all produce, right? And that stuff that's, you know, actually available out on the web or even inside of organizations. That's the machine data part of it. How do I actually derive information out of that, and then I get value out of those things? And then think about the connection to your growth strategy, right? So the resourcing is always an issue. If we're going to do this great stuff with our informational infrastructure, we can't do it with four people running SharePoint, you know, globally on the team, right? So the resourcing becomes a huge issue. So, all right. I have a little time for questions. I wanted to make sure that I got enough time for questions. I have the SBC eval stuff is up there if you want to do that. I hope that you've been asking questions on inside of Yammer and being able to get those answered too. But there's supposed to be mics. Maybe there aren't. If there aren't mics, please just put up your hand if you have a question. Go for it. Sorry? I do, yes, sorry. So the question was, do I have a drill down session that goes after this one? Yeah, I was asked to do an overview 100 level, so that's what I'm doing. So I have more information. We're going to put up white papers inside of the Yammer stream to drill down on these things. I don't have, no, it's just in other conferences, but not this one. So. Any other questions, comments? Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So the question was, how do I measure this business value, especially in productivity, right? So there's IDC has a report that the gentleman's mentioning. I've also seen studies from McKinsey, right? The average knowledge worker spends about 28 hours looking for, you know, collaborative information, is trying to figure out emails, looking for searches, those kind of things. So how do I measure that? We can do that, you know, calculation around time spent, right? And that's really difficult to do. It's hard to sort of quantify out for people to say, hey, yeah, I sent you, you know, saved you 6 hours a week on this task, and maybe that works when there's lots of people in there. What I actually prefer to think about is more holistically inside of a process. Think about how much is that information worth to you. And there's a lot of things in terms of, there's a whole school of theory around value of information and value of learning. I don't know if you've seen any of that stuff. So in Stanford and decision analysis, you can actually quantify those things out in terms of what's the value of perfect information in a process and what's the value of imperfect information in the process. And I actually think that's the better way to calculate it out. Because knowledge worker productivity becomes pretty smooshy after a while, right? It's one of those numbers that's like, well, I can save you 4 hours a week, and we can multiply that by 100 people, and then people always push back on it, right? Because we've done this before, right? So I just, I don't want to insult people's intelligence. So what I'd rather think about is thinking about process-wise, how do I quantify what the value of learning inside of a process is? How can I drill down and say the value of the information going in, if I had 20% better information in this critical decision, how much is that actually worth to me inside of my organization? Right? And so I can quantify that out. So the value of search, the value of putting in a better technology, is how do I enable that better information going into the decision? But again, we've got to go back to that value driver stuff, right? Like we always say it, and somehow we don't do it, right? I don't know why it is, but we don't do it. So it's like, hey, I want to increase business growth, so I want to do better search, so I want to put in faster or whatever it is. Well, obviously, you're putting in faster with your SharePoint, but you know, but I want to make more investment in that area. How do I then actually put those things together? How do I line that up and say, hey, yeah, because I want to be able to mine this external data store. I want to, you know, go off to Wikipedia and drag down stuff. If I want to go off to, you know, maybe my, depending on what industry you're in, you may have some sort of organization that's like a society or something that has a bunch of, you know, taxonomy data or those kind of things. Those things can help us make better decisions, but we have to be able to make the key criticality between the information that system is going to deliver and the decisions that are going to be in there, Right? And so if I can do that, I can understand the value of learning. Because it's learning to learn faster, right? Learning to learn faster is the only sustainable competitive advantage. It's one of my mentors at Shell, Ari de Hoos, who said that. But it really is learning to learn faster. Any questions, comments? Boys? Others? All right, I'm going to let you guys go early. Thank you.